The Race to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Kinetic Skateboarding. Get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. We'll get right into it. The Sixers season is over after an unbelievable seventh game and an unbelievable final shot from Kawhi Leonard that is still bouncing on the rim. Without any further ado, here's Run the Jewels.
We are the murderous pair. That went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the kush. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. True runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Race to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a likely crushed Mike Levin. I don't even know what to say, man. That we'll talk about the game, obviously, but that I just want to say off the top, like, obviously, you know, things they could have done differently in the game and plays that could have gone different ways and guys they could play better and guys that, but I don't think the Sixers players or coach have anything to be ashamed of after that series. That is a really, really, really good team that they played, or at least a good team. The top four teams in the East were pretty evenly matched this year. And what it came down to was one shot on the road against that team by one of the, you know, if not the best player in the NBA right now, one of the two or three best players in the NBA on it, like a shot, man. And sometimes the shots go down for them and sometimes they go down for us. But I thought the Sixers fought tonight. And I thought, you know, a lot of things we could take back, but I think they should be proud of the effort they put forth through the playoffs and through this year.
Yeah. That was tough to sit through. It bounced on the rim five times.
It was a
contested fadeaway jumper from the corner with a 7'2" guy bearing down on him, and the shot, the clock expiring, it left his hands with like 0.4 seconds.
Yeah, he had 4 seconds to get off that shot, and it's just unbelievable. And like, you watch it over and over again. It's funny, Kawhi said afterwards that he shot it as high as he could, and he had to get it up over Embiid, as, you know, just thinking about how much physical energy it takes to get the ball from where he was falling the way he was all the way to the rim is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really, unlucky when Jimmy stole the ball and finished and it was tied with 4 seconds left. The first thing I thought of was that game against Oklahoma City earlier in the year when Paul George hit that 4-point play after, like, we had like a, I forget how they came back, but it was a very crushing defeat. And I was like, don't let that happen. Let's not, I mean, come on. Something as crushing as a 4-point play to end the game,
yeah,
that'd be tough. And they found a way to beat that. It's obviously been a really, it's obviously been a really weird and exciting and stressful and uncertain and just different year than I think a Sixers fan has ever had. And for it to end like that, there's obviously things that they did wrong during the game that we can talk about, maybe. That's just a really, it's a hard way to go. Just watching it, I didn't even, like, you know, I was obviously, I'm watching the game at my parents' house in Hapro, and because I'm here for the lottery party in 2 days, and just, you know, you're screaming every possession, every missed box out or missed rotation or whatever it is, and you're, it's obviously a very stressful game, the whole game was. And then that shot happens, and I think I just sat there. I mean, I didn't. And what do you do? It's a contested fadeaway in the corner, falling away, and it bounced on the rim five times. It hit the front rim and bounce twice on the front rim, then hit the back rim. It's just, I mean, when those things happen, like I'm in straight up denial right now. Like that there should be some way to like check with the league that like, it's like, nah, that couldn't do it. And it's just really upsetting that basketball is a weird fucking game. And
make or miss league. It's one of those things. It reminds me of that Alshon drop in the Saints game
where you run a
play that you intellectually know is over, but you feel like if you run it through enough times in your head, there will be a different outcome.
Yeah.
Like I keep waiting for that shot not to go in. And we will talk about, we'll do another pod over the next week, few days that looks back on the entire season. But I just sort of want to talk about this series and this game here. You know, there's a lot of Brett stuff and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure, you know, believe it or not, it's going to be a wild offseason for the Sixers, and an interesting offseason for the Sixers. And as you mentioned, with the lottery party Tuesday, I'm actually, I would have obviously rather it been the day before the Eastern Conference Finals, but it'll be good for everyone to be able to sulk together one final time as we get the number one pick. This game, like, there are a lot of missed shots in this game. Like both teams missed a lot of shots, which, as I think they said on TV, game sevens are usually pretty gross like this. I think Dame Lillard was 3 of 16 or something today, 3 of 17. And the guys missing shots, Kawhi Leonard took how many shots tonight? 35, something like that?
36
shots? Yeah. 39?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of missed shots. I thought they, and there was, Greg Monroe played, 90 seconds, I think. Embiid played 45. Did he play 45 minutes? 44?
Yeah, 45. Like
they, they just battled in this game. Like, it was a really tense game beginning to end. And I had the same reaction you did to the final shot. I just kind of sat there. Like, I couldn't believe when it, I feel like I could talk for 45 minutes about this one shot. When it hit the front of the rim, I just assumed with how far it hit the front of the rim, like how far in the front it was, that it was just going to hit the ground and we were obviously going to overtime.
Yeah,
I could not believe that thing got over the rim. And Kawhi was front of the rim on just about every miss he took tonight.
Yep.
And I can't believe that shot went in. I can't believe that shot went in.
I think we could just do a podcast on the shot. I mean, obviously, it's a very impressive play. Obviously, it should have never gotten that point. The Sixers took 65 shots, and the Raptors took 89.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Sixers went to the line more. They took 30 foul shots. The Raptors took 19. But the Raptors out-rebounded them 16-5, and the Sixers had more turnovers 15-10. That's a lot of possessions. That's just a lot of fucking possessions that they just gave up and gave up and gave up. Every single person on the Raptors had an offensive rebound. Everybody except for Danny Green and Fred VanVleet had at least two offensive rebounds. And that's just like, that's a lot. And they couldn't, like, all this has been the problem the whole series. Not so much offensive rebounds, but just long rebounds, which are even more devastating somehow. Just like starting it up and having to defend another possession and get out on shooters. I think most of their threes were off of offensive rebounds, or at least a lot of them were, or just letting Serge Ibaka shoot them. And tonight he finally made them, which we can talk about also. But another thing is that the Sixers not getting defensive rebounds like caused them to not get out in transition that much. And so it wasn't just like I thought their defense for the most part was pretty good. And I thought they got things going on their offense here and there, but because they couldn't get easy buckets in transition for the most part, because they just weren't able to run off misses, it just made it all harder. And then to lose on that shot, when you think about like all the fucking things, Jimmy going 1 of 2 from the line late, Ennis missed a big foul shot late. I mean, that's obviously the pinnacle, but like Joel missing a layup off a really nice drive. Joel's travel call earlier in the game that was like just not a travel. They said he came down, he just didn't.
It was actually
obviously you could do that with the whole team, but now that you know, when you lose on a play like that, you just everything runs through your mind about like how unlikely it was that it all came down to that shot and that ball bouncing the way it did. And I just feel pretty fucked up.
It's weird too, because there are so many guys on this team that aren't the young guys who have come up through here, who we've seen grow. Specifically, you know, it's really just Joe and Ben at this point that are playing. But it did seem like a game that I hope they, like, I don't know, this series, the growth from last year, series, not Siri, asshole. This series and the growth from last year's second round series, like from both, like these first two playoffs for Embiid and Simmons are supposed to be them like growing and learning and getting to the point where they win series like this. And I think a series like this is a, just like the Boston series last year was an experience and a motivating tool. I think this series will be that for Embiid and Simmons. I don't know if you saw Embiid after the game, but he was crying pretty hard.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. We have this warped sense of how quickly they should grow because of two things. First of all, because of the first 3 years of this, which were followed so hard by all of us that they feel like part of the growth, but the growth with the good team has only been the last 2 years. So it feels so long. And then the trades this year obviously put everybody and everything and the entire team, and then the comments from Brand, the comments from the owner, even the comments from Brett at the beginning of the year about sort of jumpstarting all of this, I think puts people in a different place as to what to expect. I think a lot of people expected Eastern Conference Finals, which they were one shot away from, or even the finals. And it's all fine to expect those things. But I think I said it, you know, maybe a week or two before the playoffs, that it was hard to say for me what success would mean in the playoffs because of like of when you're going to face a team. Like if you face, you know, Boston in the first round and you lose in the first round, or you face Toronto in the second round. Well, what if they had gotten lucky and not faced Toronto in the second round? I think they played a really good team, and I think this is like definitely a growth series for them. I'm sad that they lost, and I was with the Butler layup. I was even ready for a huge Butler fourth quarter. I was great with it. I was super happy with it for that to happen and for that to get them through it. I'm sad that they're not through it, but I'm not like, I think it is a exactly where they should be in the growth of those two guys. Those two guys are the guys that are going to have to lead this team to a championship. Butler and Harris can be here and they can be part of it, but those two guys are the guys that are going to have to lead them there. And I don't think they were quite ready, but it's series like this that get them ready, I think.
Yeah, and I'm not ready to like look at a big picture and think about like learning experiences and shit. They should have won game four. Wouldn't have to be here for this. I think it's just an example of, in this game also, of just like how every, in the playoffs, especially as a as you get deeper into the playoffs, how like every possession matters. Just like every one, and the Sixers threw away too many of them. And part of that is because they don't have enough playable players. And so I think sometimes not guys that, you know, the whole starting lineup played 40 plus minutes tonight, and Embiid played 45 minutes. Samosi's ever played. In the first half, he played the most he's ever played in a half. And I think he probably tied it in the second half. So he gave it everything. And he was a plus 10 in a game. We lost. The entire starting lineup was positive plus minus. Mike Scott was minus 12. James Ennis was minus 8. And Greg Monroe was minus 9 in a minute and 50 seconds. And that's, you know, that's on the people that we said it was on before. It is tough. It is tough to see this happen because I thought, were the better team. I thought tonight Toronto just came out with a lot more urgency, a lot more sustained, consistent urgency, you made the point on Twitter, which I agree with, that like not many guys on the Raptors wanted to shoot. That's why Kawhi took fucking 39 of their 89 shots, which is crazy, which is like Kobe level, like
yeah,
Kobe without any supporting cast level. And
the amazing, just a quick aside to that, the amazing thing is that like Kawhi to me doesn't seem like a player who is doing that. He had to do that. I don't think he's a player that is built to want to do that. I think nobody on that team wanted, it was Ibaka, Lowry did not seem scared of shooting at least. Ibaka, Lowry, and Leonard were the only guys it seemed like willing to take shots tonight.
Yeah. They got to more, for the most part, got to more loose balls. They were more physical, especially on the glass. Guys need to, you can boil it down to the offensive glass. There's a lot of stuff, but like that's the reason they lost, because they weren't boxing out. They were just standing there. Maybe it's because they were tired. Maybe it's because they're just spent, but they're not picking up a guy and they're thinking they can just out jump guys, but the ball bounces the wrong way and it bounced the wrong way all fucking series, really. Just like long rebounds, just going right to Toronto. It happened over and over and over again the whole series. I thought Toronto did a really good job defensively of just rotating. I was just really impressed with how quickly, like they were throwing doubles at Embiid in the post almost every time he caught it, and he was not getting deep post position. So that was them sending doubles like 20 feet from the rim basically. And they were rotating. Obviously Embiid wasn't making like the quickest decisions to get the ball to a shooter, but they were rotating really fast and hard and with purpose and covering for each other. And I think it showed because, you know, obviously the Sixers only had 28 made buckets, but they had 16 assists. And that's very low for a Sixers team. Jimmy Butler had one assist. Yeah. And just because they were staying home when they could stay home and defending one-on-one, and they were rotating really hard and fast and preventing easy open looks on the other side. And then, you know, a lot of open looks that Embiid had from three and a couple that Tobias had just didn't connect. And, you know, in a game like this, when it's decided on a fadeaway contested corner jumper that bounces out with 0.4, bounces in with 0.4 seconds left, is every possession you can look back and say that was it. If only that happened. But
yeah,
you can do that so many times in this game because of how many opportunities they left on the table.
Well, because it was a 2-point game, you know, there are a million different one possession things you can point to that say they would have swung it.
Yeah, or had like a remotely playable backup center. They did not the entire, for a half a second of Greg Monroe looked like a surprise earlier in the series, and then that went away quickly, and then they've just been playing prevent defense with having any remotely playable center, and they didn't, and that's why they lost, because they just got killed on minutes Embiid sat, and he tried not to sit today. Like, he tried not to sit. He played 45 or 48 minutes, and he tried not to, and he was plus 10 in those minutes, and in the other three, they were a fucking, what, minus 12? So that's 3 minutes where they go minus 12. That's 3 minutes. And it was like, okay.
They were minus 12.
Yeah, Brett's like, let's go small. Let's try it. Greg Monroe didn't work. Let's go small. And then they just, two straight layups back to back, right in there. And they got to figure it out. It's on the front office, not having a guy who could play defense. You don't need a guy that, it wasn't even offensively. It wasn't even like, oh man, they just need, you know, fucking Channing Frye or some shit. Like, just someone that can hang defensively, even for a little. And they just don't have one. And I blame mostly the front office, and I blame a little bit of Brett for not getting Jonah Bolden to a place, Brett and his coaching staff, for not getting Jonah Bolden to a place where that skill set should be able to play. I know he's a rookie, and I know he's, you know, he was raw. He's been raw, and he still is and will be for a while. But that skill set is exactly part of what you want when you're just like, oh, small ball, Embiid's not out there. We just spread him out and have him at least be a shooting threat the way like Ibaka is. And he just couldn't, and Jonah has never been able to be trusted because he's not there. And I wish the coaching staff got him there, or I wish there was some fucking Kem Birch type backup center that they can just roll in and be like, all right, rebound a little, be physical inside, and don't get horribly beat off the dribble. But everybody, Boban, Amir, Monroe, everybody else just got gored. And then Toronto has two big guys that can score inside when they feel they have to, and they did both times.
Did you? Quick note: this podcast is brought to you by Kinetic Skateboarding, who Ben, the owner, will be on hand at the lottery party to draw a winner for the Nike Dunk Dog Walkers. He's having a raffle at his store. You can still buy tickets tomorrow, and you can get 9.1% off your first order by using promo code Dave Silver. Kinetic Skateboarding, Kinetic Skateboarding, Kinetic Skateboarding. Was there something? There wasn't anything strategically you saw that allowed that the rebounding thing was just sort of shocking to me. It came out of nowhere. I mean, they have seemed bigger and stronger than both teams that they've played so far in the playoffs. And the rebounding thing was wild to happen during this game. Was there something that they were doing that allowed that? Or was it just like they just weren't getting them? Did you see? It was just sort of strange.
There were a handful of times when they just... You know, similar to last, I think it didn't happen quite as much as the last couple of games, but them all sort of like collapsing in on a long three and letting the rebound go over their heads. I think that happened a couple times, but not as much as it has been. I think a lot of times Toronto just crashed like with reckless abandon. They just went in there. Kyle Lowry went in there and came up with it. I think the Sixers just didn't box out. They just didn't get a body on guys. And they thought, like, you know, for the most part, rightfully so, that we're big, we're strong, we can jump. And a lot of times they don't need to box out. They can just out jump guys. And that wasn't the case tonight because the balls bounced the wrong way. And even sometimes when they did get the rebound, I think happened to Ben, I think it might've happened to JJ and Tobias, like just, they come down with the ball and then like the Raptors just like poke it out. They just don't get enough of a hand on it or just not strong enough with it, and they turn around and there's like a Raptor in their face and they turn it over. And yeah, it's inexcusable. I don't think it's Brett's fault that we can talk about Brett, but like guys got to be strong with the ball, can't get out muscled on the boards, and in a game seven they did, and that's why they lost.
Butler was not good in the first half, but he was also not that involved. Just missed normal shots. I sort of felt like he was saving something for the second half, and there was a run. Was his run there in the third or the fourth quarter? It was in the fourth quarter.
Fourth,
I'm almost certain.
Yeah.
But then it seemed like they had Kawhi on him early. Then they went away from that, and then as soon as they put Kawhi back on him, that ended.
Yeah,
and you noted that like they were the Raptors rotations off the post double teams were really good, and that's true. But I also thought on pick and roll they recovered really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. On most there was one bucket that that Butler had, or actually I think he got to the free throw line where Redick set a screen for him and Leonard and Lowry just switched like almost for no reason. And it was the only time that I sort of questioned what they did on defense. But their defense was pretty suffocating the whole night. Now, rebounding is part of defense, obviously. But rebounding aside, I actually thought the Sixers played a pretty strong defensive game too.
Yeah.
I thought they made, you know, Leonard scored a lot of points and hit a big shot at the end. But I thought overall they did a really good job on him. They forced him to pick up his dribble a lot, which he tends to do a little earlier than mm-hmm. he should, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think they forced him into, he's only an okay passer. And a lot of the times when he would pass out of that double, it would just be that easy outlet pass and not the pass for a bucket. So I thought they did a really good job on him. And I thought defensively they did a good job overall tonight.
Yeah, I mean, he had 39 shots and 3 assists. Like,
yeah.
And he was a minus 2. Like, it was, I thought the defense was pretty good. They basically decided, we need Embiid around the rim, which I think is the right call. So that means we're going to let guys shoot threes if they want to. Mm-hmm. And for the most part of the series, that worked. Siakam was mostly a non-factor tonight. He was 0 for 2 from 3. And Ibaka has a long history of, you know, beating us from like elbow jumpers, like 16 to 19 feet out. Like, he's automatic on those, but he's always been very hesitant to shoot from three and is certainly not a, like, a prolific, like, easy breezy off the catch, it's going up shot. Like, he stares at it a little bit like Amir-esque. And he was 3 of 5 tonight from three. And that's the difference. Like, he was a plus 22, Serge Ibaka. A lot of that was because he was on the court when Embiid and Gasol mirrored each other. They both played 45 minutes. I'm pretty sure they were the exact same 45 minutes. Yeah, because Embiid was a plus 10 and Gasol was a minus 10. Yeah, Ibaka had that one with Ben on him that, like, was a contested end of shot clock three. That, like, it's just like, he shouldn't make that. Like, that should be against the rules. Like, it should be like, well, that, he would never make that shot, so we're not going to count it. Like, it's just, yeah. That shot
felt like, oh, we're going to lose. Like, that. Yeah. There were very, very few shots in that game that felt like we're going to lose. But when he had that one,
yeah.
I was like, oh, we're not going to get beat by fucking Serge Ibaka shooting contested threes, are we?
And I think that, like, I agree that they did a great job on Kawhi. I thought Ben did it for the most part, aside from a couple times when he was just out of position and, like, let Kawhi just, like, snake by him because he's strong enough and quick enough to do that. But I thought he played him really, really tough. A couple dumb fouls that Ben got in foul trouble, and he had 5 fouls at the end of the game, and they had to switch Jimmy onto Kawhi to just keep Ben out of fouling out. But the other thing about, I know I keep talking about rebounding, but that's why they lost. Like, the other thing on those rebounds is, they'll come up with the rebound and all of a sudden, you know, guys are out of position. Nobody's covering their guy because they went to just go get the board. And then, like, Kawhi gets to step into easy shots. And, like, I don't think he, aside from that one, right, because that was a 2, they ruled it a 2. But I think both of Kawhi's made 3s were off of offensive rebounds when no one was even close to him. He was 2 of 9 from 3. I think every other one was just, you know, him trying to get a decent shot off, and they were right around him, and he was short, like you said, on most of them. And so when you can't get offensive rebounds, then they get to step into threes, and they lost Kawhi on scrambles a lot. And, you know, Kyle Lowry had a couple big plays on rebounds. The other thing I think, the last defensive thought, but I thought, like, they doubled Kawhi at times. But when they were playing him tough, like in that mid-range and that, like, elbow area, and guys were kind of showing and, like, kind of helping, they would just sort of reach. Ben reached a couple times. Tobias reached a couple times and just, like, sort of slapped his wrist and, like, gave and, like, bailed Kawhi out.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't need to do that either. Like, that's the whole thing. It's like, either he's a robot, right? Like, he is an absolute robot, and he does not get distracted or dissuaded from doing things unless guys are, like, right in his face. So if you, like, wave to him, he's like a fucking, I forget what the building's called, but, like, in London, when the guard guys with the hat, outside the thing, like, you can fucking wave your hand in front of his face. It doesn't matter. You have to double him and get the ball out of his hands.
Or the guard guys outside the thing.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
That's what it's called.
Any, like, half show, like, oh, maybe I'll just, like, distract him for a second. Like, that's not going to happen. And so anytime they did that, it was just a gift, and he got to go to the line. So I thought that was pretty undisciplined on the defense's part. But for the most part, I thought they played him as good as they could play him. I think if were it not for those offensive rebounds, I think Kawhi finishes with, like, 32 points on, like, 36 shots. Like, that's a pretty big deal.
Let's talk about the 3 possessions that... Did we have 3 shot clock violations? Or
not exactly shot clock violations, but for all intents and purposes, 3 straight possessions where they did not get an actual look at the rim.
All 3 of them seem hazy to me. The only one I remember is Butler standing in the corner holding on to it at the end there when I wish he just sort of jacked it up.
Mm-hmm.
But they did you see why they couldn't get shots? I know they started that the Sixers tried to run some more dribble handoff stuff than it felt like they've run the entire series, but the Raptors were, like, blitzing that, sort of, like,
and they weren't, and the refs were not going to call, rightfully so. I'm not. This is not a complaint about the refs thing, but they weren't going to call. Like, there was grabbing going on, but, like, they're just not going to call that late in the game, and that's why, like, you know, if your offense at the end of the game is, and some of this is on Brett for sure, some of this is on the players for not executing, but, like, your offense is a guy 24 feet away from the basket, turning the other way and waiting for somebody to come over and hand the ball to.
Yeah.
And that's really frustrating. It's really frustrating that that's what they went with. I don't know if that was them like, okay, let's get JJ looks. That's how we get JJ looks. So let's try that. Or if that was Brett calling it, but it wasn't good. Jimmy, I think, to his credit, is very calm in all of those moments. And sometimes I think he's a little too calm, like taking his time a little bit too much. And three straight possessions, not getting a shot up. One, you know, Embiid tried to draw a foul on Lowry when he when he stole it. But I think that was a good no call. Embiid one time didn't take a three, and that caused a shot clock violation. It's just like, it's the playoffs. This is a really good defensive team. They've been rotating good all night. I know Embiid, he had a big three in the fourth, but that was after missing five threes. I know he wasn't comfortable shooting or at least hitting shots from beyond, but like, you just got to take the first good look, especially in the last few minutes. You just got to take the first good look you see. If that's a good look, you take it, because you're probably not going to get another one. And then the Raptors just like pressed him and pushed him, and the Sixers are having to do things from like 25 feet away in a scramble with a double team with like the shot clock winding down. And I'm going to keep saying it. And that's why they lost. Like, you can't do three straight possessions in that moment. I think it was to their testament that they endured that and another Toronto offensive rebound and had a chance to, you know, they tied it and et cetera, et cetera. But you can't fuck up that many times at the end of a game. And then, you know, you leave yourself open to a ball bouncing five times on a fadeaway contested in the corner by a 7'2" guy. I'm going to keep saying it because I can't believe it's real.
Yeah, I've yet to watch the shot again. I've seen some of the pictures from right after the shot, but I've yet. And there's actually emotion in Kawhi Leonard's face, which is shocking. Embiid played a tough game. It wasn't a great game. He shot, you know, like they pretty much gave up on they were having trouble getting him deep post position. So they gave up, it seemed like overall trying to get him the ball there. I do wish he faced up Gasol a little bit more, because I think he's so much quicker and longer than Gasol. I think he could have taken advantage of him now. The two things that I would love to see over, if I could add two skills the way you can in NBA 2K in the offseason that I would love to see added to this team are we both believe he can be a 35% three-point shooter. So if he can take that from 30 to 35, I think that is an enormous difference. And if Ben can go from 60% from the line to 70% from the line, I think it would be two enormous, give you other options at the end of games, things that you're a little more confident in, and make the offense overall a little more flexible and versatile than it is right now.
For sure.
Both those guys are doing that.
You know. Paint's clogged, all that stuff. I thought, you know, Ben hit his first five foul shots from the line tonight. I thought that was big. Missed the sixth. He was 4 or 5 from the field for 13 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks and a steal, and 5 turnovers. But I think, you know, those field goal numbers are down somewhat because he didn't get those transition opportunities because they couldn't run off misses. And somewhat, I thought he passed up a bunch of shots that he should have taken inside. A couple he kicked out, and like they got another bucket out of it, and it's like great. But like, I just think you got to make them think that when you drive to the basket, you are a threat to finish. And a couple times too many, I think, he passed out of it because he's not as confident on those shots as I'd like him to be. But I thought his baby hook game was huge. All game, a couple over Ibaka. I thought he was pretty physical down there and battling. I thought he was the reason, until Jimmy took over, I thought he was the reason that they were in the game for the most part. Obviously, JJ hit some shots and that was nice, but I think Ben's just energy and aggression on both ends, I think were a big part of why they were close when, you know, that nothing was going in. And by the way, let me just do it. Like, I have in my notes many times how are the Sixers rattled out so many shots in the first half. So many shots. The rim has like a lid on it. Nothing was rolling in whatsoever. And then the Raptors get like six rolls to start the second half. I have it down in my notes. This is before the Kawhi bounce. And so it was like just destined that, you know, that was happening. They just got, there were a couple times early to begin the half where it was like Gasol had like a just barely glanced the rim and just sort of like rolled in, and Kawhi, same thing. It's just like, man, you make guys work for it and they just kind of throw a shot up and it just rolls in. And how many and one opportunities did the Sixers have that just like rattled out or just couldn't quite finish it? And yeah, I mean, they had 13 points in the first quarter. That also hurts. They started with a lot of juice. They were playing with that level of intensity, of game seven intensity. And then just like, I think their jitters were just like pretty high and they were just like kind of over energized. And that's why things were a little long on shots, but it's,
They started 1-for-11. They had 13 points in the first quarter. I think they were only down 5 after the first quarter.
Yeah.
That was how you knew that the Sixers were going to be in the game to the end. Like I kept saying on Twitter that I was like encouraged by the way the game was going, and it was because the Raptors just none of the Raptors seemed like they wanted to shoot, and they weren't shooting that much better than the Sixers were. It was those rebounds that you've mentioned a bunch of times that were the difference in the game. I don't know what else there is to say about it. I thought Harris, you know, had a couple of stretches where he was effective and hit a couple shots. Mm-hmm.
Missed that corner three, which I'm going to think about forever, and then got a foul on him.
Redick played good defense on Lowry on one possession. I think stripped him.
Yeah.
Right at the
huge strip.
Stayed with him the whole play.
Huge strip and a huge N1 off the dribble handoff from Simmons that Ibaka stepped into him. I think that tied the game. Huge three over Gasol on the switch. Tough to shoot, you know, with a 7-footer in your face from straight away. Always, all playoffs has been really confidently hitting guys with his pump fake when they're a step behind and they're overcommitting to try to contest the shot and then stepping into a three. But, you know, still has his JJ stuff, you know? He's still not considering a loose ball. He's still...
I thought he did get one tonight. I thought he did get one loose
ball. He got one rebound.
Yeah.
Like a long rebound type thing. And I was impressed by that. But, you know... turnover because like Lowry was physical and JJ just like did the, you know, his same flail motion that he always does when somebody touches him. And there was one really, you know, I thought him pulling up off the dribble in transition with nobody else back and a guy contesting the shot was dumb. And he took a contested two off the dribble and a bad time also. But I thought he did a decent job of finding the roll man in a pick and roll. I want, you know, who knows if we'll be back next year, but I want, Embiid needs to get much, 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 much better as a role man. He just needs to get so much better. Because if there's going to be, there's occasionally big men in the league, there's probably 5 or 6 of them that can stay with Embiid in the post. And that can make it tough on him. And when that happens, we just got to be able to put that guy in the pick and roll with whoever is our point guard or ball handler and make him work. And then Embiid can roll off that. And I think Toronto did a good job of adjusting to that by just having guys back to take charges. Like there, it was, I think charges are just like bullshit. I hate most charges. I get very frustrated by almost all of them. But they prevented a lot of Embiid stuff because they're just standing there like daring him to run into him. And he did a couple times. The thing I would like, you talked about you want Embiid to shoot 35%. You want Simmons to get his foul shooting up. I would love this team to have better, more composed interior passing. And because they're big, and so other teams are going to try to draw charges on them because they can't hang at the rim. And so if guys do that, I would love just a little, you know, a little leave pass, a little like dump off to a guy in the dunker spot or a little alley-oop type thing. That just didn't happen enough in all season and in the playoffs because Embiid's not used to that short roll yet with
guys, little guys under him trying to draw charges. He does a good job of like Euro stepping out of it for sure. I wish he hit that one around Ibaka. But if he can, there's going to be, you know, Simmons, Tobias, whoever underneath there, Ennis, to be on the receiving end of those passes. And it'd be nice if Embiid could just, you know, pick up a little bit of, you know, that's the thing that Jokic is so good at, like just having, not letting his huge momentum carry him into guys and drawing charges, but like, you know, pulling up, decelerating and like finding an open, whether it's an open shooter or an open guy underneath. That would have, that opened up the game a lot more.
Anything else? I feel like I don't want to, with the perspective of a few days, I'd like to reflect back on the season and talk about who should be back. We're going to have a whole off season of who should be back, who shouldn't be back. I thought overall, we talked about the growth of Ben and Joel in playoff series. I thought Brown had a really good playoffs overall. I thought he had adjusted more during these playoffs than he has, and he had to adjust more. Mm-hmm. Oh, and one quick thing about the interior passing. I do think having the same team together the entire year will probably help
for
them
sure
if they're able to do that.
And I'll just say, I think everybody should be back. I don't know how the money's going to shake out with JJ, but I would like to try to see JJ back. And I think I would definitely max Jimmy. And I would definitely, and I know Tobias has not been as good as advertised in this role, but I think you need him. You don't know how healthy all these other guys are going to be. I think it's better to have really good players, you know? The idea of like, well, we could get other people. We know how hard free agency is. Keep the guys here and let these guys grow together. I think they're going to take this personally and build from this. And I don't want this to be the last time that all these guys play together. And obviously I've been on record many times of saying like firing Brett, especially firing Brett because he lost that game is just fucking bullshit. It's fucking bullshit. And everybody who believes that is stupid. And everybody who fucking tweets at me who thinks that Brett should be fired has like huge NFL fan in their bio and like just doesn't know jack shit. Like it's so obvious. Just like reactionary, thoughtless, like fucking turds. That's what they are. Like you can have issues with like, oh, I wish he ran this stuff. But like Brett had four different fucking teams this year and he adapted as it went on. And he adapted from season to season. It was like, oh, now we run pick and rolls because we have guys who can run pick and rolls. And oh, now we hit, when we put a dump it to Embiid in the post. Oh, now we have Simmons, so we need to push in transition. Like he adjusts with the players that he has. And he found a way to adjust despite having like basically seven playable ones and no backup Embiid. And there were never, it's not on Brett to find for the most part, except for the Jonah thing I mentioned. It's not on Brett to find, to like just magically make Greg Monroe or Boban or whoever better at moving their feet defensively. And I think if they fire him, they're just so fucking stupid to look at the coaching carousel that's happening everywhere and say like, yep, we went in on that. And like for the fucking how many time people are going to approach Jay Wright about trying to like get a, like, come on, like how many times we can do this? Continuity matters. He's at the very least a good coach. Everybody talking about, like, you've mentioned this before a million times, but like his rotations, like what rotations? Like you're finding guys that can play together and everybody else can't play. No amount of rotations is going to make Korkmaz a playable NBA guy. He's not there. And Zaire had the weird thing, and Shake was on the two-way. All these guys that like could maybe become something one day, just like for many reasons, weren't there. And I just don't think you can blame Brett for all of it. Every coach has flaws, for sure. He's not perfect. He's not the best coach in the league. But I just think you start going down the road of just like, well, let's just get somebody else. And then it's, you know, you're fucking interviewing like Mike Woodson for the job and like just fold the team, sell the team. If you're the owners and you want to do that, get out of here.
I want to offer a slightly different perspective on Brett, who I think has done a good job and I think has pretty much had an impossible job over the last 6 years and handled it as well as anyone could have. And I thought he did a good job this year considering the circumstances, and I think he showed growth too. And I know his teams were bad in the first 2 years, but Brad Stevens' first 2 years in the playoffs was 2-8, you know. This is obviously a different team, but also a different result. I read the Mark Stein thing a little bit differently than I think most do, but I think there's two ways to look at it. The way I thought about it is, like, the entire front office is a Brian Colangelo hired front office. I think it was pretty clear to everybody that Colangelo wasn't in love with Brett, just never really had the right chance to move on from him. And my thought when I read the Stein thing is they don't want him to be coach, but if he makes the finals, it will be impossible for them to make the change. Not that ownership had laid down the law and said, if you don't win this game or win this series, then you don't have a job. I guess on some level, I would respect if they do not believe that he is the right coach, that regardless of the circumstance, if they would just make a change. You know, that's what the Raptors made a change after winning 58 games. And it behooved them. It worked. So there's a lot of things that go on behind closed doors in the locker room that we don't know about. And I don't want to pretend that I know about it. I know from my perspective, and you just agreed from your perspective, that I think Brett Brown has done a good job and Brett Brown has earned the right to continue to coach the Sixers until he proves that he hasn't, unless there is something that we don't know about that is part of it. And if they were just saying, this is the ultimatum, if you don't go further than you went last year, you're going to get fired, I think that's ridiculous, especially considering the unknown playoff seeding and who you're going to play that we talked about a half an hour ago. So,
yeah.
That wasn't exactly how I read the Stein report, but it is prescient to mention that this ownership has had an extraordinary problem keeping anybody in charge for an extended period of time without changing it. Brett is literally the only thing that hasn't changed over the last 6 years. So,
and us,
My guess would be he'll be back, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
That would be my guess.
I want you to know I'm now recording the podcast laying on my bedroom at my parents' house on the ground. Just like slowly becoming one with the earth, turning to dust.
You got anything else on this game?
I'm really sad. I'm just really sad. I think the Sixers were the better team. I think a handful of plays here and there, or home court, or if Embiid had been healthy the whole series, any number of those things, and the Sixers win this more handily than they did. I just think they're the more talented team. I think the coaching matchup is fairly even if we had a bigger advantage in that world. I just can't believe that shot went in.
They got to go out and win, like go out and win 60 games next year. Like let's be the team that beats the shit out of everybody in the regular season.
The Boston Celtics that Bill Simmons imagined this year.
Yeah. Yeah, or the way that Milwaukee Bucks were.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to hear that the regular season doesn't mean anything and the Bucks were the best team in the regular season. They're going to go to the finals. You know, the Warriors were the best team in the West in the regular season. They're probably going to go to the finals too. Like the regular season is pretty indicative, except for some rare exceptions, of who is really, really good. And the Sixers don't have anybody on this team that has the championship pedigree that can say, we can just sort of like hold off. Having this game in Philadelphia would have been a win.
For sure.
Full stop. Would have been a win.
For sure.
They would have won. If they were the 2 seed instead of Toronto, they would be in the Eastern Conference Finals right now. And you know, 6 games seems like a lot. It's a big difference. It's like 8% of a, or, you know, 7 or 8% of an NBA season, which is the difference between the Sixers and the Raptors. But that is achievable. The Sixers should be, with the talent they have on this team, they should be able to get to that level. And I think that's what they need to do next year. And they have to come out and prove all season long that they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. And it should only be them and the Bucks. And they should also find a way to get Malcolm Brogdon. But that's the other thing. Mm-hmm. So
I think I have an issue with people who keep saying that, like, this is the Sixers, like, all in year. Like, this was them. Yeah. Like, they went all in. Like, there's nothing else than this. This is like their last shot, which is just, it's just crazy. Like, they obviously, Elton took, you know, took 2 very big swings, and I would add a third, maybe not a swing, but a third decisive bunt to trade Markel. But that's not like, this is Ben Simmons' second year. It's Embiid's third year. And I know the window feels like it's a little less open than it would be otherwise because of Embiid's injury history. But if they were going all in, they wouldn't have made multiple, like, team-changing, like, earthquaking moves during the season that made them, like, have to relearn, like, everything and just try to gel at the last minute. Like, you can go all in an off season and saying, like, we're going for broke this season and then that's it. But this is, they acquired Jimmy and Tobias ostensibly to see if it's going to work out and then to max both of them and then have all these guys around for, you know, the next 5 years. And so the idea that this is like an all-in season and the Sixers are now like coming up fools, like the Sixers should be the favorites in the East next year. They absolutely should be. They have too many good players not to be. And if they have an offseason where they spend time together in Napa and get to know each other and work out together and figure out new systems in place and all that stuff, and learn from this for sure. I'm still not there, but eventually they will be. And I just think that this team should be really good, and they should have won tonight. They should have boxed out more. A couple of their shots should have rattled in. Kawhi's baseline jumper should not have bounced 6 times and then gone in inexplicably. It's tough, and I you know, I feel for Joe. I think he put everything he had into this, and I think he blames himself for not being as healthy as he should be, and hopefully he works on his body, all that stuff. But, I mean, this playoff basketball, it gets physical, and sometimes, like, shit happens. And just as Brandon Graham got a hand on the football in Tom Brady's hand, like, this inexplicably crazy thing happened, and everybody lives with it, and then you just kind of move on, and it's sad because I think more than any other fan base, I've said this before, but more than any other fan base in sports history, like, we are like a vocal, you know, living, breathing organism,
yeah,
like, attached, mm-hmm, to this thing. And we feel like we are not just like passersby watching a team and then moving on. It feels like we are like part of it, partially because of our own doing, partially because of the team, you know, reacting to us, partially because of the media, you know, sort of bifurcating us as like a pro-process, anti-process fan base. But I just feel like, you know, I just fucking feel this loss, man. I really do. It's heavy on me, and I really wanted them to win this game. I really wanted to go to show up to the lottery party on Tuesday and just fucking
hug it out.
I mean, high fives and everybody being really pumped up, but I don't know. I guess sad hugs will be just as impactful.
Yeah, and a friend of mine texted me before. He was like, hey, I'm sorry. He was like, if of anybody with any team, he was like, I know you guys felt that. And I was like, what's the lottery party going to be like on Tuesday? He said, pretty fitting that the final one will happen after the most crushing defeat of the era. And as much as I would love to have it after the win,
yeah,
it all does seem pretty poetic for it to happen this way. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, we will see everybody on Tuesday with Choo-Choo Madu Obama, who gets into town tomorrow. I'm not going to say where he's staying, but it's in Old City. That's all I'm going to say. He's staying somewhere in Old City. He's going to get an extra day, and he did say he plans on staying out late with everybody on Tuesday night. That's what he told me.
Wow.
So, yep, we can watch the Sixers get number one pick and then watch Warriors. Who is it? Warriors, Portland Trailblazers in the Western Conference Finals. How about it? All right.
This is sad.
That's it.
They should have won.
Another season.
This is bad.
Our sixth
season. It's not the
season.
Way this should have gone.
No.
That shot should have rimmed out. There's a chance that like Ben or Tobias fouls out in the overtime, which would have been tough also, but.
What happens in the overtime?
Hopefully it's just, you know, more Jimmy takeover. And I think maybe probably getting him, try to get Embiid in the post, facing up. This sucks. I hate this. Is this how podcasts are supposed to go? Is this what people listen to podcasts for?
This, I think they do on this one, this time. This feels like universal balance for the Cody Parkey.
Sure.
Field goal.
Double dunk.
It really does. The quadruple dunk. All right. We will see everyone on Tuesday.
I really see it. Like, I feel like I'm going crazy. Like, I see the shot bouncing on the rim. I just can't, like, I can't stop replaying it. Like, I feel like it's an OCD thing. Like, I'm just watching it and I'm just like breaking down.
Since when do fall away shots from that far that hit the front of the rim end up going in?
That's inexplicable.
It really is. And not only that, it hit the front rim twice and then the back rim twice? Is that what happened?
Yeah, from his, so it would have been side rim to side rim, but the front rim from where Kawhi was shooting it. Yeah. Front rim twice, back rim three times, I think.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, at least the Celtics lost.
That feels good. Do you feel slightly better that, you know, I thought the Celtics series last year was closer than five. You know, the confetti game, JJ passing it to no one, those kinds of things. But do you think that this isn't like an improvement over that? Is that like weak shit?
I think this is a clear improvement over that. I always disagree that it was closer than five. Five is five to me. I know we disagree on that, but I thought this series was them going toe to toe with a team that was like obviously the second best team in the conference all year. And I thought that they, to your point about them going all in this year, I think part of the confusion comes from not fans, but I think like people within the organization painted it that way, you know, and they said it and they drew a line sort of in the sand about the success of this year's team, which I thought was foolish. And I said, like when I wrote a thing earlier this year that I think they would have had a better chance at the finals if they had had less disruption. And I don't think that means that they had a good chance at the finals, but I did always think that making this many changes, like, you know, it makes it hard. I think it makes it hard. They made a lot of changes during this year. And I think they should, I'm less sure that I want to bring everybody back right now. I'll think about it over the next couple of days, but I think if they were looking for some sort of sign that they should, I think these playoffs were enough of a sign. I really do. For a starting lineup that played 10 games together, they're gonna have to fucking try their asses off this summer to fill out that roster.
Yeah.
Seriously, no bullshit. And I know they kept everyone in that front office together for some reason, a front office that hasn't been able to do that in 3 years. But if they've ever had to do it, they're going to have to do it now. But I think they should be, I know it sounds crazy after that series, but I think they should be encouraged by what they saw. And I think this team having a full season together is a close to 60 win team. And I think they should really consider that.
I think so too.
I agree with you that going all in this year by trading for these guys made it not a this year proposition, made it like sort of a tryout thing. The thing that makes you nervous is that they spent all their money, their assets for the tryout.
Yeah, but they still got a bunch of picks this year. You know, they got a bunch of picks this year. They got four guys on rookie contracts that you think are rotation players, or at least, they traded the Chamet, but they drafted, over the last whatever this year, they have acquired four guys, and maybe you like Highsmith as much as I do. I'm ready to. Who didn't think I was going to mention Haywood Highsmith on this fucking podcast?
You know what I love? He didn't dress up for any of the games. Was it him that was wearing like track suits each game? Or was it, it was him or the other guy?
Jake.
Or Milton.
Yeah.
One of them. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sad.
I can't believe it's over.
I'm just laying on the ground with a microphone next to me. So upsetting. Just like looking under my bed. Oh God, how did that fucking
This is like Celtic
in?
Fan porn right
oh,
now.
Oh sure. I think they're still too upset to like really
You're dirty
enjoy
talking Celtics fans right
That's
now.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, we did it.
All right.
We did a good job.
We did it.
We did what we could do.
Yep.
I'll see you.
Get
in
ready for
2 days.
Here's what we'll see you in 2 days. We have to look forward to. We have draft pods, we have some free agency pods, lottery party, the off season. Who knows who we'll talk to? All right. Well, I thank you, Mike. Thank everyone who thank you who are listening through another season of Sixers Basketball. I can't believe this podcast still exists. And thanks, of course, to all of our sponsors who have supported us through it and who are going to be a big reason that we'll raise so much money. Oh, and obviously, thank you to our charities, Providence Animal Center and Coded by Kids, who will both be there on Tuesday, taking your money. Give them your money. Give them your money. All right. We'll see you Tuesday. Are you down with TTP? They traded Okafor.
This one hurts, though. Yeah. You know, look, face.
We are the murderous pair. That went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning a bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. True runner over and out of this bitch. To the spotlight. Woo. Copying of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Pumping the clouds on a missile to turn.